So that's what it's all about, really, right? Right there. That's what it's all about. Not running, not hiding, not covering up, not being small, not constricting ourselves, not contracting, but letting ourselves be. Letting ourselves be the truest self that we have come to be. That's what Christmas is. That's the whole Christmas message right there. That there is a rebirthing in our minds, a rebirthing of our consciousness, and a knowing once again of the truth of who we are. A remembering, but not just a remembering like, oh yeah, I just remembered I, you know, left something in the oven. It starts with that, right? It starts with that kind of, oh yeah. But then it's an invitation, it's an opening, it's a piercing knowing, a consciousness awakening. A door that cannot be shut again has opened. So every Christmas time, we celebrate this idea again and again, but it's not because we've shut back. You know, there's sort of like cumulative growth that happens in our consciousness. We may feel like sometimes we're going backwards, right? You're like, oh, darn, that old thing, that issue is up again. I'm doing that again, you know? And we think somehow we've regressed. And maybe we've slipped back a little, like the Baptists say, backsliding, right? But it's not possible to go all the way back, ever. Yeah, because our consciousness keeps opening and opening and opening, and our hearts keep opening and opening and opening, and our minds keep opening, and our bodies keep opening and relaxing. And then all that can happen is the truth of who we are. All that can be known in the world is more and more and more of the truth that we already came to be. The only difference between masters like Jesus and us is that we just forgot, and they don't forget. So the forgetting and remembering cycle that we keep getting on is just part of our human experience that we haven't quite yet mastered. But when we do recognize, I'm not going to run anymore, I'm not going to hide anymore, I'm not going to get myself out of breath and run in circles and try to be something that I'm not. And instead, I'm just going to relax into what I am and who I am. That's when we meet the Christ. That's when we ignite the spirit of Christmas and we live that spirit. As Daniel sang at the opening, there's something about Christmas time. Good Jewish boy singing the song, you know? It's just like there's something about it. It's the season of divine light that we are all in, regardless of our religious walk or our spiritual walk. The Christ does not belong only to Christianity. It is a universal principle. Hindus talk about the Christ all the time. I know some great Hindu teachers have written books on Jesus and the Christ principle. Paramahansa Yogananda talked about in Self-Realization Fellowship, talks about the Christ. So it's everywhere, permeating everywhere. It's a universal principle. It's a cosmic principle. And it's the truth of who we are in our hearts. That's the message of Christmas. And joy is certainly a part of that. That exuberant joy that makes us want to dance and shout and connect and have fun. And that quiet joy. The joy that just resides in us in those quiet moments of reflection. It's all part of the expression. Many years ago at Christmas time, a wise man from the East traveled this direction. Actually, I was in Columbia, Missouri, and landed in the same public hot tub where I was soaking. There's a guy from Vietnam, and we started having this conversation. And I had of late at that time been wondering why I felt so much joy. Isn't it interesting that the mind just wants to like chew on it? Oh, why am I so happy? Sort of a curiosity, like what happened, you know, that so we could keep it going. Maybe that was part of it. So anyway, I'd been kind of living in that question, and then I had this conversation with this man, and he said at the end of our conversation, I see that your faith brings you great joy. And I was like, ha, there's my answer. It's our faith, right? It's our understanding that the presence that permeates life and that permeates ourselves and that is the thing that guides us every day in our lives, that it is that that brings us joy. It is that that causes us to feel joy because we are connected in a conscious way to the truth of who we are. We're making the closest connection we can to that truest divine self that lives inside of us. So when we are in the experience of joy, in the presence of joy, we can also be aware that, here I am living my faith in this abiding joy. It brings us full circle, doesn't it, of this journey of Christmas time Advent that prepares us for the awakening of this truth in us. That faith begins the journey, this living faith that we talked about this year, and brings us to this day of abiding joy as we have traveled through infinite love, as we have traveled through deep peace. So when we come back around, it's like, and reflect back onto where we've been on the journey. Remember the first week of Advent, we talked, it was also the first day of Hanukkah, and we told the story of that Lisa brought to me of Chaim, and how Chaim had longed to have Hanukkah celebration, right? Candles for their menorah, but there had been a great drought, and there was not enough olive oil, and so he had this faith, this prayer that he literally wrote down on paper and left on the mountaintop into the wind so that the Almighty would receive his prayer. And that prayer was answered, and the menorahs were lit all over the village. But this is how it is when we exercise our faith, that we put out our prayers of faith, that not only do we receive the answer to our prayers, getting what we need, but we also get our joy multiplied. And so in the multiplication of his joy, the other villagers saw him for the first time, really saw and honored who he was. He wasn't just the poorest man in the village anymore. He was a man of great faith that cared about all of the village and cared deeply about this practice of lighting the menorahs and the miracle that it represented. And he also gained a spiritual friendship out of it. So you can think about times in your life when you have exercised your faith to cast some kind of prayer into the wind, so to speak, and it not only comes back, but there are multiplied joys, right? We say it every Sunday when we do the offertory, right? As we give, so we receive, and that there, this sense of who I am, the truth of who I am, is multiplied. So this Christ idea, this divine self, its emanation is multiplied as I give. As I give, I receive, and as I receive, I give, and we're just in this constant flow of abundant good. It just gets so good, you know? Life gets so good when we walk this path. I remember somebody just mentioned Karen Drucker to me when Karen Drucker sang that song, "I Lost the Right to Sing the Blues." You know, it's like we get onto this spiritual path. I love the blues. You probably love the blues too. But it's just like, yeah, I totally got it when she said that. You lose the right to complain. Because life just gets sweet. And it's not because necessarily circumstances have changed, although circumstances will change. They'll be difficult at times. They'll be challenging at times. They'll be joyful at times. They'll be easy at times. Life will feel mundane at times, you know, but it's that underneath, it's that abiding joy that is underneath. That's what we're touching. Abiding means, according to the dictionary, fixed or stable state of being. So there is this sense that there is a fixed or stable state of being in us that is joy. Now, when we might be feeling down or depressed or blue, we might think, I don't know where that is, but it seems to have exited somewhere, you know. But if we can just trust and breathe into it and recognize that, no, there is a little joy in the quiet. There is a little space. I can make a little space in myself anyway to and have hold faith that the joy is there, that the joy will come again, that it comes back around. And doesn't it? It comes back around, right? The feeling, the experience, the outward expression of joy. Peace Pilgrim said, "How could one know God and not be joyous? How could one know God and not be joyous?" And then on the other hand, Lucinda Williams sings, "You took my joy and I want it back." Do you know Lucinda Williams? Some of you, that's kind of how she sings, right? And then she repeats that over and over. You took my joy and I want it back. Yeah. The first time I heard this, Brenly's a fan of hers, the first time we were dating and she started playing Lucinda Williams. And at first I was like, okay, I could kind of get with her. And then this song came on. I was like, oh no. I'm not listening to this. I'm not listening to her say that somebody took her joy, because it's not possible, right? It's not possible for somebody or something to take our joy. And so that's when we get into that sort of blaming, judgmental, kind of egoic mind that just it creates cycles for us that are unhealthy and that will make us feel like we are so far separated from joy. I don't mean to talk badly about Lucinda. We've seen her in concert, and she is wonderful in her own way. Joy abides in us as an everlasting state of being. So if we can just breathe into that knowing, just breathe into that knowing. And even if you're at a place where you're like, huh, I don't know, I'm not feeling it. It's like, just okay, I'm gonna go with this. I'm going to practice this. I'm going to just say, all right, this is true that there is this abiding joy. If it's true that there is a spirit within me, I believe that. So I believe that there is this goodness in me, that there is a spirit that is present, that I'm going to breathe into that possibility. Maybe we could start with that, the possibility that joy can be accessed, that joy won't be such an elusive thing to me, but it is something that can come through me and as me and into my life. And then, you know, once we've trained our consciousness on the possibility, it's just like if you're looking for a red Mustang and all of a sudden you see red Mustangs all over the highway, right? It's because you brought it into your consciousness. So if you bring into your consciousness that joy is not elusive but abiding in me, then lo and behold, you're going to find joy. It's going to bump into you. It's going to show up in your life. You're going to see it. You're going to find yourself laughing and dancing and singing or having those sort of reflective moments of satisfaction and fulfillment, because you have simply entertained the possibility that it could be living inside of you and in your life. That's abiding joy. That's that knowing that it is here for us. Pierre Teilhard, I usually don't say his first name, so it's tripping me up. Teilhard de Chardin, that's it. He said this. His name is longer than the quote. Joy is the most infallible sign of the presence of God. So when we are in the presence of joy, we can recognize, the infallible sign, the presence of God is here. It's not that Old Testament kind of idea of the, you know, punishing, wrathful kind of sense that we had in the early days. It's joy, the infallible presence of God. Jenny Herzog, in the throes, I'd say in the heart of our experience of COVID in the fall of 2022, was not feeling very joyful. She was feeling isolated. She was feeling anxious. She lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and was starting to get chilly, and she had just quit her job. And she noticed that people around her, her friends were also expressing the sense of isolation and anxiousness. And she thought, what could I do? And a divine idea came through. Tap for joy. See, she's a jazz singer and a tap dancer. And so she went out into the park, and she just at the beginning it was just her friends, and started giving them tap lessons. And then she put up a handmade sign that said tap for joy. And on Saturdays from, you know, this hour and 15 minutes, you can come and just, it's free. It's just a community gathering to learn to tap dance. And she made these 2x2 pieces of board that people could stand on, be physically distanced. And then people would show up in sneakers and sandals, which are hard to tap in. So then she put out an all call on social media, and she got bags and boxes full of tap shoes from people's closets and garages and basements and places that they hadn't been seen for some time. And they got to come out and play and dance in the park. And so people would show up and they just like go through and find something that, you know, close enough to fit them and jump on a board and start tapping. And she said that the reason why she knew this would work or had a sense of it was because she said it's impossible to tap dance and be unhappy at the same time. And so she, I'm kind of wanting to take tap dancing lessons now, aren't you? I think we should have tap here at Unity. Anyway, so that was her foundational belief, right, in this idea, this vision, was that we cannot, it's impossible to be unhappy while you tap dance. And so her theory proved true. And dozens of people, some of the people that were interviewed, this was on a local NPR station, said, you know, people of all ages, all ethnicities, they would join together in the park, and some would come once, and many of them were devoted, came every week, and would just have fun. Sometimes she always had recorded music, but sometimes live musicians would show up and play as well. And one of her students was 8-year-old Rias Jackowitz, who had... He and his mother had just moved from New York to Cambridge, and he was having a hard time, you know, because he was on Zoom classes and he didn't really know anybody. And she said, his mother said, he's a very artistic, creative guy. And here he found tap and he just fell in love. So now he's tap dancing every week and they've become fast friends. So just the love of following our hearts, right? Opening ourselves. When we open, when we create that space that we talked about, divine ideas flow, divine ideas come through. And those ideas, as they drop in, we realize, oh, I have a gift to offer. I know how to do that. You know, in her case, tap dancing. It came easily and effortlessly. And whatever it is for you that, you know, smiling and hugging or your particular talent or gift that you could give to the world. I love that when people just stand around with those signs. This was pre-COVID, of course, and just say free hugs. You know, I've hugged a couple people at the Broadway Plaza that are standing there. It's just young men just hugging people as they come by. It's just delightful, right? That experience, that connection that we make, that surprising connection that happens when we share ourselves, when we open ourselves. So if we follow our divine ideas through, they land us in joyful places, in joyful expressions, places we might not have imagined otherwise. Believe it or not, there is a book called In Tap Dancing in Zen. Tap Dancing in Zen. It's by Jerry Larkin. And Jerry Larkin speaks about the Dalai Lama. Now, the Dalai Lama, think about the Dalai Lama, one of the most powerful, if you will, spiritual contemporary teachers of our time that is living, a living spiritual leader that is really teaching the masses, essentially, and bringing Tibetan Buddhist ideas to the masses. But it's not, they're not really owned by Tibetan Buddhism. It's just, you know, who they are, who what they emanate. And part of what gets emanated through the Dalai Lama is the spirit of friendliness and joy. A huge part of how he shows up. In fact, Jerry Larkin writes, when you meet him face to face, he grins at you like you are his long-lost friend. He meets everybody the same. There's no sort of this sense of hierarchy, right? He's there to embrace and to connect with each one. And he looks deep into your eyes, Jerry writes, with breathtaking kindness. And he laughs with everyone all the time. So when he was asked at one time, why do all the Tibetan Buddhist monks, it seemed like, giggle all the time? Like, what is so funny that they're like, they're just bringers of this joy all the time? There's just a real curiosity. It was John Cleese, actually, from Monty Python's Hall of Fame, you know, fame that was asking the question. And the answer was very serious. Actually, the Dalai Lama got very serious when he answered about laughter. And he said, laughter is very helpful to me because when I'm teaching or I am in political negotiations, when people laugh, they open their mind to new ideas. They're more willing to entertain something new after they have laughed. And so part of that is just a recognition that it's easier for us to admit new ideas and new ways of thinking and open the door through laughter and joy. Now, here's a serious consideration. What if the hokey pokey is what it's all about? Don't you love that? Yeah, it's on t-shirts. It's everywhere. And to one woman in particular, that is what it was all about. Her name is Phyllis Brinkerhoff, and she lives in Prairie Village, Kansas. And CBS Sunday Morning picked up her story. She loves the hokey pokey. Now, a lot of people do the hokey pokey, you know, at a wedding or whatever. I don't know that everybody would say they love it. They just kind of sort of groan into the circle, right? All right, yeah, right. Okay, right hand, left hand, you know. So, I mean, we do it. But Phyllis loved it. She loved it so much that she made a copy of the CD and she gave it to her neighbor, and she was insistent that the neighbor listen to it and pretty much get hooked on it like Phyllis was. And she was like, you know, have you listened yet? She kept, every time she would see her, you know, she's sort of a front porch sitter, right? So you see your neighbor as you're walking by and then they have this conversation. Then she started sending urgent text messages saying they were urgent. Urgent, have you listened to the hokey pokey yet? You know, are you into it? Are you doing it at home with your daughter? You know, and the neighbor would just, every time she'd see her, she'd try to change the subject. You know, she's like, didn't really have time, wasn't really that interested. And so anyway, she happened to hear Phyllis say that it was her 93rd birthday coming up. And the neighbor had this divine idea. So she went home and told her daughter was pretty young, and together they put together these invitations to all the neighbors to come and sing and dance the hokey pokey for Phyllis on her front yard, on her birthday. And this is what they did. And wait till you see Phyllis's face. This is the next slide. There she is. So the hokey pokey, that is what it's all about. But it's not just the hokey pokey, right? It's what is the hokey pokey. The hokey pokey is a silly song that gets us all together. It's a song that we tend to do in a circle. It's a song that we do in community, in unison. It is an act of generosity that this neighbor had this idea and then everybody in the neighborhood came together. Why? Simply to bring joy. That's it. You know, what if we made our purpose in life, our aim in the next week, and then it'll soon become a habit, to just bring joy, to truly be a spreader of joy? That could be a lot of fun. And it will bring, of course, us just as much joy in the sharing of that joy as it does to the recipient who gets to receive it. So laughing easily and effortlessly, singing, dancing, these are ways that we, these expressions of joy bring greater joy to us. You think about the Dalai Lama's, you know, if you walk away from that story, you just realize, wow, here's a spiritual practice, laugh often and easily, right? That's one that we could all sign up for, right? It's like meditate 20 minutes twice a day, like the transcendental meditation, maybe. Laugh easily and often? Absolutely, sign me up. That's the spiritual practice I want to do, right? Just as effective, right? Just as effective. And so we can say yes to that. After Brenly and Grace and I had a tickle fest last night, you know, of course, in the moment, I was just fully in it. But afterwards, it was just like, God, it feels so good to laugh like that, right? Just a sort of belly laughing, massaging all your organs. That's why they say laughter is good medicine, right? Because it just does that for us. Or you can just tell a silly little joke, like this one. Oh, that was it. I didn't have to tell a joke. How much did Santa pay for his sleigh? Nothing. It was on the house. All right. You know, what are we really doing when we are relaxing into joy? We are just being ourselves, right? When we laugh like that, we are just being ourselves. We're being natural. That's like Miracle on 34th Street. Remember that movie, Miracle on 43rd? Yeah, I love that movie. So Kris Kringle, of course, is Santa Claus. He's not just playing Santa Claus at Macy's. He is Santa Claus, right? But all the management are, and the staff are kind of like, uh-huh, yeah, like as he's, you know, pretty much as being Santa Claus and saying he's Santa Claus, and they're all saying, uh-huh, yeah, right. So they're just kind of going along with it. It seems pretty harmless. But after a while, they start to think it's a problem. And so they bring a psychiatrist in, you know, because this guy's crazy. He thinks he's Santa Claus, right? We got to, you know, give him some help and help him move through this illusion, delusion that he's having. And then pretty soon they take him to court and he has to testify that he's Santa Claus. But all the while you can see that he is Santa Claus, right? He is the spirit of Santa Claus. He is honest and he is jolly and he is generous and he is wise and he is kind and he is loving and he is compassionate. He's everything that Santa Claus is. And so the whole time Kris Kringle remains true to who he is. You can't rattle him in the court or in the psychiatry exam, because it's just like, it's just who I am. Now, what if we were like that about being the Christ? If we were just unrattled, not hesitant, you know, not afraid, not there were no charades, right? There was no cover-up. It's just, this is who I am. This is the truth of who I am. We step into it, we allow it, you know, if you think about it, some people get all upset that, you know, we intermix Christ and Santa at Christmas time, or that Santa maybe is better known than the Christ spirit. Christmas time is probably more the complaint. But, you know, if you think about it, there's very similar characteristics, right? The generosity, the joy, the love, all of these things, all these qualities, spiritual qualities, are embodied by both. And so if we could step into this idea, if we could be like Kris Kringle and just be like, it can't be separated from me because it just is who I am. So yeah, if I go stand on the street corner and start yelling, I'm the Christ, some people might start to go, I don't know about that person, you know? And maybe we'll even get to take into court and we'll have to testify. But if we know it, if we know it in truth, if we live it, if we breathe it, if we allow ourselves to really let the truth of who we are have its way with us, even as an experiment, we could try it. We'll notice how natural that is. We'll notice how unnatural it is to do all the other things that we do in trying to be someone other than who we are. We'll suddenly recognize how all that baggage of trying to be something else or someone else falls away, and we're just simply, purely, and truly, at the very essence of us, this bubbling up of joy, this deep abiding joy. It's there for us. It's always there for us. It's just covered up by all the stuff. I think Eric Butterworth maybe said it best when he said, when the ties that bind the mind are broken and a person is introduced to their real self that has no limitations, the bells of heaven ring for joy. When we finally stop binding the mind, we break open those ties, then we are introduced to our real self, and then the bells of heaven. So what is it that you are doing that is binding up your mind? What are the ties that bind your mind? You can think of them as simple as unwrapping a package at Christmas, right? You've got a nice big bow on there, and you just undo the bow. Sometimes it takes a while to get the bow undone if somebody's like a really good wrapper. But that's okay. If we could be mindful of the fact every time we undo a package during this season that we are untying our minds, unbinding our minds, and we are opening up to the presence, to the truth, to the gift of who we are. The gift giving, the exchange, that's just a representation, right, of what's really happening. That there is a generosity shared and there is a joy to be had as we unbind the mind. So wherever we notice the mind is sort of tied up, when we notice ourselves not feeling joy or feeling quite the opposite, we can say, ah, what's tying up my mind right now? What's binding me right now? And could I just loosen that a little bit and see the gift that is there for me to open up, the joy that abides inside of me to be let out? That's really what we're after, isn't it? So the Christ light, then, is what is available to us once we have opened up the mind like that. Then we notice that the mind is just filled with light. You know, when all the busy thoughts and all that, you know, programs and projects and conversations and things to do and things that happened and previous conversations and conversations yet to have, when we begin to meditate and notice all that busyness that's going on, one of my favorite things to do is just like imagine opening a door and just ushering all that stuff out. And when I do, all that's there is light. And so you just bathe yourself in that light. Just let yourself breathe in that light and be in that light. It's a kind of anointing, right? That's what Christ means, anointed. And so we anoint ourselves in that light. We bathe in that light. We recognize who we are. And then we affirm that truth. We can speak that truth and claim that truth. I am the Christ. With deep abiding joy, I am that Christ. Or whatever else, whatever other qualities, or just simply that, I am the Christ. Now, for some of us to even begin to think of that or say that, it's like, feels a little blasphemous, right? Even after all your years in unity, it might even still feel a little bit at bay. Anybody feel that way? Still feels a little bit like, yeah, I don't know if I can go there. So we just let open the door as much as we can, right? Let a little light peek through. Yeah, I am becoming the Christ. I am moving toward the truth of who I am. I am leaving behind what I am not. And so it's a process. It's like a labyrinth walk, right? It's a process of shedding and coming to center and integrating and bringing out into the world and then going back and shedding again and setting our intentions. That's life. That's our walk. As long as we're walking toward, right? As long as we are walking toward that truth, that light, then we are living and breathing the spirit of Christmas. It doesn't have to be just at Christmas time, of course, either. It's every day of our lives. Just like the Yule is coming in a few days, right? The winter solstice will be the day that is the shortest day time, the longest night. And then after that, the coming of the light. Every day, more and more and more light to come. That's what we open to. You know, the owl, this is making me come back to winter solstice. We had a ritual Friday night on the labyrinth. Michelle, who was just up here at Chikala, did a really wonderful job with her priestess sisters leading that ritual. And it was in the theme of owl because we have these two great horned owls that have been living on our property for months and months and months. Every night at dusk, the owls are hooting and sometimes into the dark are hooting. It's so powerful. And, you know, I come out of my office and Felicia comes down and Mr. Bruce from Saunder Creek Academy, we take pictures and we watch the owls and we listen to them hoot. So I really invite you to come around that time and to really enjoy this. And the other night one, you know, I came out, one flew over and I just sort of followed it back to one of the pinnacles of the cypress tree. And I've been holding this idea of just a deeper understanding of what this owl is bringing, you know. When Daniel was singing at 9:30 this morning, the image came in my mind of the owl was spread out with a big heart on its chest, and I remember that the owl has zero tolerance for deception. They can see in the dark, and they have zero tolerance for deception. Yeah. This is abiding joy. This is stepping into the Christ. This is Christmas. Zero tolerance for deception. Do not deceive yourselves anymore. You are not less than, you are not small, you don't need to contract, you don't need to be something other than you are. Let that deception go. And then there's just your big heart and your big truth of who you are revealed in the wisdom of owl, in the wisdom of Christ, in the wisdom of the truth of who you are. I am the Christ, and joy abides in me and emanates from me. That's the truth of who we are. Let's say it together. Together? I am the Christ, abiding in and emanating joy. So it is.